Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Happy Throwback Thursday.
You've got us this week. No wet sets this week.
Together again for the first time.
What's that from?
Oh, Young Frankenstein.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I like that show.
I had a fun time. I went to the Gypsy Run years and years ago, and it was a raucous. Remember Gypsy Runs? Remember that, Rob?
What do we call them now, though? Can we call them Gypsy Runs?
Oh, shoot.
No.
Oh, man, I'm not allowed to say that.
No,
but
no. That's, listen, somebody.
It was, Gypsy Run was somebody, the name, what we called
yes,
it.
Yes, somebody invited me to one yesterday and called it a Gypsy Run, and it was somebody who was very proactive about changing the name of the Legacy Road.
But yet they still called it.
Yes.
Okay.
So
right,
until we
fair.
Hear otherwise,
fine.
Guys.
So Gypsy Run was when the final dress of a Broadway show. I don't think they do them as much nowadays, but I went to Curtains. I remember going to Gypsy Run. I went to Young Frankenstein, and usually, because I was in a show at the time, and so it's your off night. It's like a Monday night. And then
they
would invite all of the companies to come see the show. So it ended up being like this really fun, you know, evening. And, you know, you read about it in books and you hear about Gypsy. Our guests have told us about
them, yeah.
You know, like in the 60s and 70s, it was like a real thing where all the chorus gypsies would all go to see their well,
and
chorus people.
Maybe, I don't know if I'm correct on this. Wasn't it like back in the olden days, it was done on a bare stage because the show was then going out of town?
Right.
So it was the show before.
Yes, that's right.
And it was usually rehearsed at a Broadway theater.
That's right. That's
so it was like representative pieces of everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, the
As
good
opposed
old days.
To now, which is like.
Oh, geez.
You're seeing the full show.
Everything.
Yeah.
I know.
Anyway, oh, I miss those.
Anyway, hi. Okay.
Hi. I wish I could go back in time and be in one of those.
Oh, I do too.
I want to see the Gypsy Run of Applause with Leroy.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
I'd want to see the Gypsy Run of West Side Story. I feel like that was, people didn't know what to do with it, I feel like. It was so, why? Because Music Man won the Tony that year.
You probably would have been snarky and been like, what's this snooze fest?
Snooze fest, classical music and ballet and a musical?
Let's go to Howard Johnson's.
Hojo's.
Let's go to Hojo's.
That was here when I moved to New York, on the corner of, like right by the L'Enfantin Theater.
And it's
right
not
down
there anymore.
And there was that Harlequin Studios that we talk about sometimes.
Yes,
do you remember that?
I remember Harlequin Studios.
Any listeners that were, ran around in the 80s, and that's where you would go, and the studios were so nasty.
They were
and there was
gross.
A guy, he would like open his book, this big ledger book. And
nothing
like,
was computerized.
Yeah. No, it was so scary.
Like, where's
this
that
long
money
staircase
going?
Up a very steep and narrow staircase.
I was going to say, very narrow stairway.
Yeah, it Thank was you. Very. Oh, Harlequin, man, those were the days.
Well,
anyway.
Also, speaking of things that have passed.
Oh, yeah, good transition.
Kevin, you have a list.
Well, we have a couple people that we lost in the last 2 weeks. That, and I was, if one of them, I thought, did we interview Mark Bramble? But we never got to
He was
to
on
him.
Our list and we never got to
Mark
him.
Bramble, who, you know, gave us 42nd Street, among many other things, but he was a great writer. Hugh Forden, who we lost, well, I would have loved to have a chat with him.
Now, who exactly was Hugh
Forden?
He
was a behind-the-scenes He created the record company DRG Records, which put out a lot of cast albums. He started it in the 70s and was pretty much running it until he passed away. You know, he's like 83, I think.
Wow.
And he gave us a lot of cast recordings. He wrote a biography about Oscar Hammerstein II. He was just a behind-the-scenes personality and presence that really gave us a lot of history and a lot of the recordings that we have today. And I think that he's someone that we should celebrate because a lot of the things that you listen to, listeners, are because of Hugh Forden.
Thank you, Hugh.
And Andre Previn. Great composer, great conductor, great, you know, everything. I mean, he was like a true consummate musician. He wrote the musical The Coco.
Yes, he did.
You know, and he wrote other things. You know, there's a great song that he wrote with Betty Comden and Adolph Green that Thanks But No Thanks. That's a great song.
That's the story of my life. Well, Thanks But No Thanks.
Well, that was, which was also when we asked Sondheim if he would be on our podcast. Sondheim was very sweet to when he responded to me, but he said, to quote Betty and Adolph, "Thanks But No Thanks, Kevin." And I thought, all right, well, thanks for quoting, but.
Thanks for quote at least turning us down with like a song lyric.
I'll take it.
And not one of his own.
No.
Classy guy.
Mark Bramble, Hugh Forden, Andre Previn. I just took note of them and their passing because they gave us a lot in our business, and you know, we always want to try to capture their stories before we lose them.
Yeah, Mark was on our list, but he was young.
Yeah.
So it was one of those, like, oh, we'll get to him.
Yeah.
You don't expect...
Yeah, totally.
Somebody asked me yesterday, they're like, oh, did you ever interview Maren Mazzie? And I was like, no. She was 57. Like,
yeah,
we thought, oh, my God, like 20 years from now, we'll
exactly.
get to her.
No, exactly.
You know, my God, it's just so sad. You know what I heard, and I don't know if this is true?
What?
Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah.
Revival is happening
right
at Roundabout.
That's right.
Right next door to us. And in the opening, the prologue... Kelly O'Hara
yes.
comes out, and she's wearing Maren's hat. From
yes.
the is that true?
Yes.
That's really...
How classy is that?
That's really sweet.
I loved that 1999-2000 revival. I saw it three times, I think.
That was perfection.
Yeah.
That was musical comedy perfection.
I've got to see this one, obviously. I mean, I'm excited to see it. I love the score. I think Kiss Me, Kate is wonderful, but boy, that Maren... And it was beautiful. Bryce Stokes. Oh, my God.
That whole
so good.
And what I really appreciated about that production... And had you seen the show before in any other incarnation?
No, I was very new.
I had seen a couple of them beforehand, and I thought it was really impressive to me that Michael Blakemore, his direction, not only did he make... The numbers work, obviously. The book scenes were hysterical, but yes. the Shakespeare was really brilliant, and that's rare. I don't think you see that a lot.
He's
in
a brilliant
Kiss Me,
director.
Kate.
I mean, he's a very smart.
Oh my God,
smart, great! It showed, and he won. He won that year.
He did, right? And well deserved.
Yeah.
You know, I always wanted to see in Kiss Me, Kate.
Who?
When they were. I think they could still do it. What do I care? Kevin Kline and Meryl Streep.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh, yes, Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
like
Kevin Kline and Meryl Streep.
Unbelievable
as the two leads.
Oh my God, like, just give it to me in concert. Like, go to Lincoln Center. Come on.
Somebody
guys.
Was saying to me that Kevin Kline gets offered a lot of stuff but turns it down, and his name is—I don't know if this is true—Kevin DeKline.
Oh, really? But
what a nickname.
Present laughter, he was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that one.
Well, that's such a perfect role for him.
Yes,
it's like
it
that's like,
true.
Fits like a glove.
Right.
Did you see Andrea Martin has left Gary?
Yeah, interesting.
Broke four ribs.
I cannot believe that.
She broke four ribs.
What do you do? What are you doing in that show?
I was like, what did they do to her?
She's fine for Pippin, which is hanging upside down on the trapeze thing, but then this thing, she can't.
On a four-character play,
shit.
She's down?
God.
God, I love her so much.
She's so funny.
I was so...
You've got all those SCTVs, the old TV series.
I want to get
DVD.
Her on this show because
we need to get her on
the
show.
SCTV. Some of her impersonations included Linda Lavin,
so specific,
and Phyllis Newman. They used to do like a Merv Griffin sketch,
yeah.
And she would play like the guest that was always on Merv Griffin. And I'm like, who the hell does a right. Phyllis Newman right. impression?
Totally.
As soon as that's one of those people that I'm like, please come sit by me.
Exactly.
Please
you're
sit
a winner.
By me. You're a winner in my book automatically. Speaking of things going away, dignity. We have
your
to talk,
dignity?
Not my dignity. No. We have to talk about this because it's making the rounds. Magic Mike auditions.
Oh, Rob, did you already do your video submission?
I'm offer only.
Okay. All right. All right.
My feeling is that I'm a little too ripped.
Okay. I understand.
For everybody, and yeah. I don't want to intimidate them. Pearl Studios. Magic Mike auditions. Do you know what happened?
Oh, Rob, I don't think anything in our business has gotten around so quickly, so stinkily,
folks,
as the great poop.
I don't know how to tell you this. Somebody pooped on the floor of the Magic Mike audition.
The holding room, right?
In the holding room.
Yeah.
Not even dancing and like they lost control.
No, picture it though, you guys.
Sicily.
Picture it. Pearl Studios, 2018. If actors, you definitely know what it looks like. But you guys, these holding rooms, for those of you who are not auditioners, it's crazy. It is the reason why we call it cattle call is because it really does feel that way. There's so many people in these rooms. You're shoved. There's bags everywhere. There's people going, mom, me, mo, moo. People warming up, stretching everywhere. So you can just imagine, how did someone drop a deuce in Pearl Studios and get away with it? And people found out within like 2 hours. I mean, it was all over social media, Rob.
I'm sorry. Right now I'm reading Audition Update. And on Backstage, and the title
Audition Update is where you go to find out what the auditions are today and like how are they going, who's in the room, is it busy, blah, blah, blah.
It's the title is The Mystery Pooper.
Oh my God.
And they said it wasn't. Now here's the best part of the story is the monitor walked up to the person that was concerned because they didn't know what they were concerned about and said, what are you concerned about? And said, somebody pooped on the floor and you're stepping in it. The monitor stepped in the poop.
That is so nasty.
So I'm sorry, guys. Oh, there is no dignity left in this world.
It's amazing.
So, but now here's what I heard.
But yes,
please. Yesterday, somebody pooped at Ripley.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I did. I thought someone was joking when they said that. I heard that, but
no.
I thought it was a joke.
Because this is gross. Somebody took a photo, spread the photo around.
No.
So I saw it.
So now it's become a thing.
So somebody, I don't know who is doing this, but I kind of want to get
the weirdest.
Reach out to us.
Fetish.
We'll put you on the podcast.
we'll hide
we'll
your identity.
We'll saran wrap.
We'll hide your
equipment.
Identity.
We'll hide your identity. We'll disguise your voice.
Yep. We'll bring diapers.
We'll bring diapers, whatever you need.
But we want to know. We want to know. Like, what's this all about? Why?
So folks that are like, I wish I lived in New York. No, you don't. No, you don't. It's bad enough when you see the poop on the subway, but the fact that someone's doing it in your office, not good.
No. And you still got to get rejected after that, too. I mean,
and then you got to get. I made a joke on Facebook. I said that, you know, it actually, it's not somebody's poop. Somebody dropped their non-ec paycheck from SpongeBob.
Oh,
which we should talk about.
We definitely should talk about this because
you're a member of Actors Equity, Kevin. Tell everybody what's happening.
Let's just give a little. I will try to do a little. I haven't done a lot of research, but I will try to give a little history as I know it. We're talking about national tours, everybody. First Broadway national tours. And in the day when a show was on Broadway, and if it was a hit, even if it wasn't a hit, it would go out on a first national tour, meaning it would hit all of the big cities. All of the actors were union actors, meaning that they got paid a union wage. Usually it was like a Broadway wage. And then what started to happen in like the late 90s, early aughts, where a lot of producers decided that they weren't going to go equity. They were going to go non-equity, which means that they don't have to follow any rules. They can pay their actors whatever they want to pay them. And some, if you're a lead, you might get paid $500 a week. If you're in the ensemble, you might get paid $150 or $200. And so they started putting them out. And Actors Equity then said, well, all right, we got to compete with this because we still need to have union actors being hired. So what they did was they made this tiered system. So then big shows could go out with a tiered contract where the actors weren't getting paid as much as they would if it was a big first Broadway national tour, but at least they were union actors. At least you were getting your weeks and all of that. Well, now it seems that we're back into the non-equity world again, and SpongeBob, and you said Margaritaville is the other show. It is a Broadway show that's going out non-equity. And usually a producer has to show or prove that they would not be able to make their money back if they hired all equity people. Because it's at the end of the line, the bottom line, it's all money. But these producers will make hand over fist and money. And I just have a hard time believing that a title like SpongeBob SquarePants is going to go on the road to Boston, to Philadelphia, to Toronto, to all these big cities, and not sell out and not make their money. I just have a really hard time believing that.
It's three shows. Sorry, somebody's singing next door.
Yep.
It is SpongeBob.
Yep.
Escape to Margaritaville.
Escape to Margaritaville,
which
sorry.
Is the
yes,
Jimmy
I
Buffett
the
musical.
Whole, right.
And Bandstand. Now, Bandstand, this is my opinion. Bandstand ran a couple of months on Broadway, did not make its money back, and I think has every right to say, listen, we're non-equity. There's nothing recognizable about this show that's going to sell it on the road. They had a hard enough time selling it in New York with Laura Osnes and Corey and Beth Level, like name names.
Yeah, yeah.
So my feeling is you want to go non-ec? Great. That makes total sense.
Those numbers make sense to me.
That makes sense to me. Margaritaville is a Jimmy Buffett musical. Jimmy Buffett, a person who's got such a huge following. They're building a fucking hotel for him.
I know.
In Times Square.
They have names for his fans.
Parrot Heads, the Parrot Heads.
There you
right?
go. Yeah.
And then there's SpongeBob, which I'm sorry. That's you're telling me that's not going to sell out all over the country? And these people are getting, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was something like $550 a week for principals and like $450 a week for ensemble.
I should just pause here and tell listeners that for equity minimum, when you go on tour now, if it's a First National, it's like close to like $2,000 a week, you know?
Yeah.
And then plus a per diem, that's like over like $800 or something now.
Now,
so
from a producing standpoint, I absolutely understand that you want to make as much money as possible. But come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Do the tier.
And I'm sorry, this isn't like a broad, this isn't a sit down. This isn't like they've got a residence for a while and they got a home. These are people who are going to do it, then get on a bus and then go somewhere else and then on another bus and another bus and another bus. There's no stability here. Mm-mm. So how is this possible? How is this possible that both of these shows, which I have a very strong feeling are going to do very well on the road.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And also, they still charge the same price for the tickets, everyone. So, like, it's not like, well, it's we're going to tell all the audiences that it's non-equity. No, they don't know. They think they're seeing the Broadway show. They're calling it a first Broadway show, so they think that this is all, not to say that there's not incredibly talented non-equity people, because they are incredibly talented, but it's not the same as hiring all union actors. It just is not the same.
I just did some math.
Yes, sir.
$550 a week. Right, for principals. And let's imagine there's 10 principals. Mm-hmm. You know what that costs? $5,500.
A week.
Now let's imagine the ticket prices are $100 each. They have to sell at least 55 tickets.
Done.
55 tickets.
Yeah.
You're telling me that?
Yep.
Sorry.
Don't toss the table.
So what do we do to fix it? So how does this get fixed?
Well, so what? That's why Equity often says to put in your bio, you know, proud member of Actors Equity, so that we're trying to train audiences to know what the union is, so that the people in the regions, when they go to the theater, they know that they're not seeing an equity show. They're seeing a non-equity show, even though they're paying the equity price. So they're still, it's part of the subscription, right? So it's trying to teach audiences. I don't know how effective we are at teaching them and explaining what equity is, but I think that's one way of informing. But it's the producers always win. I mean, let's be honest here. Like, come on.
And I hate
the lab rat thing. I mean, it was like, we got a deal out of it, but it's, you know, the producers, they hold everything. I mean, they have the power here.
Absolutely, because they can always say we're not going to hire.
Yeah.
And also, I hate to say that they're not stupid, you know.
No, well, they know what they're
doing. Now Equity, I think, is saying, correct me if I'm wrong, they're now putting these three contracts, maybe not Bandstand, forgive me, maybe it might not be Bandstand, but I know at least Margarita and SpongeBob are on a do not work list.
Yeah.
So even though it's non-equity, Equity is saying these are do not work lists, and if you take the job, it might prohibit you from entering Actors Equity at some point.
Oh, well, wow, I didn't know that.
That
so
was,
even as a non-equity person, if you do that, then...
Yeah. That was the big controversy with Not a Lab Rat, which was they were telling everybody that if you had EMC points or you were looking to join Equity at some point and you had participated in a reading or a lab that was part of the Broadway league, you were not going to then, you would not be allowed entrance into Actors Equity.
That's tough. That's a tough
I don't know. It's, I mean, there's so much stuff going on. But you're right. The producers always find a way of winning, because even this Lab Rat thing, they got a raise, which they deserved because they hadn't had a raise in, what, like 10 years or 7 years or something like that. But then this idea of profit sharing, it only comes in like after a show makes like $10 million.
Right. No, it's like
some
way,
like astronomical number, or it's been running 10 years. Something bizarre like that. So... And it has to be like a hit. It has to be Hamilton.
Oh, no, it's got to be like a Book of Mormon.
It's got to be Book of Mormon or Hamilton.
Which, I mean, this is a high-risk, high-yield business. So I guess that makes sense to me, because you just can't have every... You'd be throwing it around for every flop show, you know. But
still, this all goes back to my main point, which is somebody took a dump on the Pearl studio floor.
I got nothing,
folks. We got nothing. You know what we do have?
My favorite things.
My favorite things.
Let's do it. I have one and a half.
What?
Yeah. What? Well, because I have one, and then it led to another one. Thank you, Kevin Daly.
So, you got a 1.5-er?
Yeah, I got a 1.5-er.
So this is favorite things.
Yeah.
So doing
a lot.
Okay, with great. Like,
with
great,
a couple
great,
S's
great.
On the end of it.
Couple of S's.
So this, I think you probably saw this. I hope you have.
I see nothing.
This is an episode from a TV series.
That was Harriet Harris. Sorry.
And that was pretty good. That was a good Harriet Harris.
Really quickly. And
she's
then
very funny.
Hold on. I'm going to do a Harriet Harris for you, and then we can go back into
great.
Your thing.
Let's okay. do it. Let's do it.
They don't know. I'm hotter news than Dooza, Helen Hayes, and Bernhardt all in one. They're on top, and I look like a loser. Wait and see who's standing when my play is done. So welcome all you fine young ladies. You're checking in to Hotel Hades. I won't stand by while critics praise ya. You're getting shipped. Here she comes. To Southeast Asia. Thank you.
That was pretty good.
Well, you know, I'm trying.
It was like Harriet Harris, Mrs. Mears. Like that was great.
That's who it was. That was her from Millie.
Oh, I remember. I didn't know anyone knew all those lyrics. But I'm very impressed that you do.
my problem is anytime someone says like, "Oh, that's my skip song on a CD."
Yes.
That's usually like, "Oh, that's my favorite song."
That's your
song.
Favorite song.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've
people
talked
like,
about this
people
before.
Like, oh, I always skip They Don't Know, and I'm like, "What? How could that's the only song I listen to." I skip to track 8 or 9 and go, what's going on here?
Like You're Timeless to Me in Hairspray. Skip song.
No,
I knew you were going to say that.
Like Ziss from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. One of my favorite. I can sing all the lyrics for you right now.
Oh,
I've got
gosh.
No shame.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No,
one
no,
and a
no,
half.
I love
I
it.
Apologize.
Oh, God. That was a good one.
Thank you. I have nothing else.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So I have one episode from a TV series that's a recent TV series. It is sort of a, it's a really actually a very novel idea for this whole, there's been 3 seasons now, and this is episode 3 of the third. You know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's episode 3 of the third season. The series is called Documentary Now.
Yes.
It's created by Fred Armisen, Bill Hader, and Seth Meyers, all SNL people, all very, very fun comedians and writers in their own right. They're the creators, writers, and executive producers of this. I didn't even know about this series until this episode came out.
Have you not seen the Grey Gardens parody?
Oh, my God, no.
Or the Spalding Gray one? Oh,
no,
my God.
No,
okay.
But I was obsessed with Grey Gardens, so I need to watch that. Well, this is a spoof on the Pennybaker company cast recording. And so this is an episode, a 24-minute episode that is, they even like filmed it in the style of the original company cast recording making of. And so this is episode 3 of season three, episode 3. And it's called Co-op, COOP. They couldn't afford the hyphen, the producers. So it's just Co-op. And it's about people who live in a co-op in the 70s and the shenanigans. Alex Brightman's in it. Renee Elise Goldsberry's in it. You see Richard Kind is in it. Paula Pell is in it. Thomas G. Shepherd, you can totally see he was a previous guest. You can see them spoofing him. You can see them spoofing Sondheim. I think it is so brilliantly done. And I just read an article in Vulture about the making of it and how, you know, Seth Meyers and John Mulaney and all of them, they really, you could tell that they love that recording, and they loved that documentary, and they also really appreciate musical theater. Eli Boland helped them write some of the music and help focus the songs, because they are direct parodies of Sondheim songs. I mean, like Another 100 People, they even did the orchestration was very similar, and it's very tongue-in-cheek, but they take it very, very seriously. And the lady, Paula Pell, who does this, just the stritch, is just so...
I'm dead.
It's so brilliant.
She's amazing.
It is so funny, and yet she's not putting on a voice to be Stritch, but the attitude, the way she is, it's just very, very funny.
I gotta go. Bye. Like I previously said before we started recording.
It's so good. It's fantastic. And I guess a lot of stuff was left on the cutting room floor because they just didn't have time for the 24 minutes that it took. But they really, you could tell, they really, really, really respected A, company and Sondheim, the documentary that they made. And if you haven't seen the original documentary, I mean, where have you been? But you check that out from 1970. It's so incredible. And then watch this. And then as a follow-up, my good friend, our good friend, Kevin Daly, reminded me.
1.5.
The 0.5 part of 0.5. This is after you watch that, and it's on IFC, the Independent Film Channel, and if you have like a cable subscription, you can just find it.
You can also buy the episode, I think, for $2.99 on
yes,
iTunes.
Yes, that's right, exactly, yeah. And on Amazon as well. But then you can go to YouTube and type in. I never knew this until Kevin recommended it to me. Type in Chris Elliott.
Oh,
making of the cast album for Housewives.
Yes. From the David Letterman show.
My goodness. This must have been 15, 20 years ago. When David Letterman switched to CBS?
Yeah.
So it's right after that. He had Chris Elliott, who you would know him. Obviously, he's in all those
Schitt's
movies.
Creek.
But he's in Schitt's Creek. That's what he's in now. I mean, God love him. He's so funny. But he made all these spoof, you know, 5-minute videos. And so this is him making of the song. It even says it's the Sondheim musical Housewives, about just every day in the life of a housewife, which is very much a send up of Just a Housewife as well from Working. But it's him as Stritch. He wears a button up, you know, the button up Stritch costume, you know, with the tights on, and he's very much him. He's not in drag at all. I mean, he's just dressed as Stritch with glasses on and everything. And they do the whole thing where he can't nail the song, and he's having a hard time, you know, doing the right, you know, nailing the number. They say, is he drunk? And he drops some bottle or like, you know, like a one of those, you know, the flasks. Oh my gosh. And it's very much in the same style as this the documentary now one. But it's just really funny that they made it on television, late night television, that they were doing a sketch about making of a cast recording. That rocks me. And it's very funny. He's really, really funny in this. They have their cast singing, doing like Bella Signor, like doing those stupid warm-ups. I don't know. I get a kick out of it. It's 5 minutes of your time. You should definitely check it out. Chris Elliott making of the cast album for Housewives! ! And then before that, go to IFC or buy the episode for the Co-op documentary. Co-op. Now, boy, it's just fantastic.
Co-op.
Oh man, those songs are good.
The songs are really good.
Yeah. And so I've got to check out all the other episodes, because I didn't know that every single episode is shot to celebrate or to send up a specific documentary style, because they totally go. I mean, the Pennybaker, it is shot, and they take pains to really nail those shots.
Like, when you watch the other ones, that's how they do it. It's an accurate recreation. They use this, I believe they use like the same cameras or the same type of cameras.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
It's very well done. So,
yeah, they're great, those guys. Yeah. And John Mulaney, who wrote a lot of this episode, is a huge musical theater nut. Huge. And his impression of Stephen Sondheim is hysterical in this thing. When he's trying to give her the pronunciation.
Ruined.
Say,
then he makes him, what does he have?
She goes, I'm very intimidated by you now.
So good. Fantastic. So there you go. There you go.
And
1.5.
And it's, what's his name doing? Thomas Shepard. It's the guy, Taron Killam, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He sounds just like Thomas Shepard.
He looks like they're like annoyed and frustrated the same way. Yeah. I can't wait to go back and watch the original again.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So that's the celebration today.
I love that. It's such a good episode.
Yeah,
okay,
it is.
So mine.
Yes.
Mine is, this is going to be kind of weird. I was looking back 30 years ago. 30 years ago, I was taking a look back at one of the worst seasons on Broadway. But actually,
the 80s, early 80s.
Late 80s.
Oh, was it Quilters?
No, enough about quilters.
I know. I just feel like
that was a bad year. Yeah. That was a bad year. No, my favorite thing this week, is the 1989 Tony Awards broadcast.
Oh, I've watched that before.
It's a good one. Once again, great podcast that just came out a couple of months ago, My Little Tonys. They cover a bunch of, they actually go in depth with each of these broadcasts. They haven't done 89 yet, so I'm excited to see if they ever get to 89. Because how many years have the Tonys been going on now? 70, 80? Since 47.
47.
I'm not good at math.
Carry the one. 61.
I'm not good at math.
62 years.
Yeah. A long time.
72 years.
A long time is what we're going to say. Yeah. A long time.
72.
So the 1989 season, the 88-89 season, gave us such musical hits, if you remember, as Legs Diamond.
Yes.
Welcome to the Club.
What? I don't... What?
Welcome to the Club, the Cy Coleman musical.
Oh, my gosh.
About the divorce court.
I totally forgot about that.
So did the people watching it. Welcome to the Club.
I completely forgot that made it
right?
That was on Broadway.
It was at the Music Box.
Oh,
I'm pointing the wrong way.
The wrong
it's
way.
At the Music Box.
Way,
it's at the Music Box.
Wow.
And here were the nominees for Best Musical.
Hmm.
There were only three this year.
Oh, God.
Black and Blue.
Yes.
Which was a review.
Yes.
Jerome Robbins Broadway.
Yes.
Which was
a review.
And Starmites.
Starmites. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. With Liz Larson, Gabriel Barry. Yeah.
And Hard to Be the Diva.
Yes.
Sharon McKnight.
That's right. Sharon McKnight.
So this broadcast.
Wowza. I have watched this podcast.
It's from the Lontfontaine Theater in 1989. And it's very, very clear that they have nothing to celebrate this year. Just right from the beginning. So Angela Lansbury comes out. This is like the fifth time she's hosting. And the last time she hosts a Tony broadcast. She comes out and she sings Everything's Coming Up Roses.
Yes.
And the audience gives her a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. And she's actually moved. You can see like she starts to cry, which I'm like, oh, that's so
sweet.
Angela.
Oh, Ange.
What I really was hoping would happen, because it was on CBS, which was the same network Murder, She Wrote was on, was like somebody had killed Jerome Robbins and like she solved the murder. During the broadcast.
It could be like a whole thing, like they used to do with in the 70s.
Yeah, like the Alexander Cohen, the theme show.
Hildy Parks
wrote a murder mystery.
Right, exactly.
And it's called Who Killed Jerome Robbins? And I think Angela's like, now my nephew will present. And he comes out with blood on his hands.
Yes, exactly.
And they arrest him.
It
wouldn't be real cops. It'd be like fake cops.
Yeah.
It'd be like, Jerry Orbach from Law & Order coming out and like slapping the cuffs on him. And then she's like, solves the crime.
This is way more interesting than the actual.
I think so. Now, come to think of it, this is what they really should have done.
Work on this.
Hold on.
All right, anyway.
So what she says is, after Everything's Coming Up Roses, she goes, tonight's going to be about recreating magic and celebrating moments from the past. And you're like, because you can't celebrate anything now, can you? The first two people who win on the broadcast, it's so exciting. Tell me if these names ring a bell. Best Supporting Actor in a Musical? Scott Wise.
Oh, hey,
Best Supporting Actress in a Musical? Debbie Shapiro. Not Debbie Shapiro Gravitt.
No.
Not Debbie Gravitt. Debbie Shapiro.
Two previous guests. I love it.
One of the things I really like about this broadcast, to be honest with you, is even though the season is not so hot, the speeches are very lovely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're all very lovely and short and charming. Christine Baranski wins Best Supporting Actress.
Oh.
For Rumors.
Oh, yeah.
The perennial high school play. You can't leave high school without having done at least one production of Rumors.
Rumors and Agnes of God, yeah.
Okay, no, they don't do Agnes of God in high school. They do it in colleges.
Right.
But thank you for trying to incorporate my loves.
There it is.
I literally just spit all over my computer.
That's great.
I spit all over my computer.
Comedy.
The best musical clips that they show are actually kind of cool. They have Ruth Brown and Linda Hopkins from Black and Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have seen Black and Blue. Mm-hmm. Can we bring that back?
Yeah.
Where's that? Bring Robert Butler that. The Jerome Robbins Broadway, which is the Robbins montage,
mm-hmm.
which is fabulous because, where else are you going to see
this?
We
need that, yes.
They do, High Button Shoes, and they do Fiddler on the Roof, and they do West Side Story, Mambo, and then, of course, Starmites. We are the Starmites, the mighty Starmites. That's literally the song.
They made a cast recording of it years later.
Oh, I think they made a couple of cast. How, there are some shows. Why am I whispering? There are some shows, Kevin.
Like World of the Worlds.
That you're like, not only do they have a cast recording, there's two cast recordings out there. I won't say anything on air.
Wait, but, what? I don't read lips.
I'll tell you later. Okay, all right. There's just a couple that I'm like, how did you get not one, but it's two?
It's called Vanity Project. Oh. It's called Someone's Got Money in the Pockets.
Give me the money. I like the money. But okay,
yes.
They used to do these at the Tonys, and they don't do it anymore, and it makes me upset, but they did it in this 1999 broadcast, and I think it's really important that we should go back to doing it. They presented 2 to 3 minute scenes from the plays.
Oh, the old, how do we represent the plays?
I don't.
Conversation.
What is the issue with how they used to do it? Which is like Colleen Dewhurst would come out and be like, Wendy Wasserstein's The Heidi Chronicles.
I know.
It's a story of a woman finding her identity.
The music would play underneath.
Yes, exactly. Like, exactly. And it was always like a serious actress like coming out to explain it.
It beats when they sat in a semicircle and just like read monologues from the shows that they were in. You almost did a spit take.
That was the
laziest. It was so like,
I think that was 2000, 2001.
I feel like James Earl Jones was there. And
that
was
the laziest
like,
broadcast.
What the F is going on, you guys?
I think he even said that at one point. What like, the fuck is happening?
It's like,
it's okay,
really?
James.
Let's just have them all sit together and just
That was
talk.
So... bizarre. Not as bizarre is the one in the early 90s where they were like, this is how a play gets produced. First of all, there's auditions.
Yes.
And like they brought out like the actors from Sisters Rosenzweig.
Right.
And they were auditioning for like Angels in America.
It's just weird.
And it was like, what is happening?
Yeah, and like good points for trying, but guys.
But guys, what is wrong with this? Which is like, this is The Ferryman. It's about a group of people that are stuck together during an iron. In this scene, she's just found out that he's done this.
Bam, go.
Boom. We get it.
Well, I mean, when students graduate from college, that's how they get an agent. They do scenes. They like just do a 2 minute scene. Let me see some acting. Come on.
So the really cool thing though is I think the four plays that they pick, all of them are really lovely and they all capture something really nice. First of all, it's Joan Allen doing a scene from The Heidi Chronicles. She didn't get to do the movie. It's a brilliant performance. It was a career-making performance.
And it's captured now.
And it's captured now.
We get to see why she was so wonderful.
So you get to see that. You get to see the great Pauline Collins and Shirley Valentine, which is a play that also sort of, that was the one of the, that if I didn't say Agnes of God, I have an idea that Shirley Valentine would have been like the one. Do you know Shirley Valentine?
No.
It's a one-woman play about this woman. It's a one-woman play. She's a British housewife, and the first act is her complaining about how like dull her life is and how she wants to escape it. And then act two is she's on a Greek isle, and she's like, I ran away. And she tells you the whole story of like how she got to the Greek isle and the Greek guy she met on the island. It's actually really lovely, but it's never done anymore.
What's it called? Shirley?
Shirley Valentine. They made it into a movie.
Hmm.
Largely New York with Bill Irwin. You get to see Bill Irwin doing his brilliant work. My God.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I'm really excited about. They do a 2 minute scene from Lend Me a Tenor, and it's Philip Bosco and Victor Garber. And first of all, Phil Bosco,
he's
someone I wish we had gotten on this show because he was just a journeyman actor.
That's right.
He was like a meat and potatoes, New Jersey, like I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And watching him and Victor Garber do farce together, there's nothing better. It's a masterclass on how this play should be performed. So that's something I think everybody should watch. There's also a little funny section with Steve Martin where he gives you a tutorial on how to greet a friend after a bad show. Like, how do you tell your, you know the show was bad. But things like, he's like, you are so brave.
Oh, that's good.
Or your performance is what everyone told me it was going to be.
So,
it's really, really funny. So anyway, take a look at it. It's the 1989 Tony Awards. Oh, I forgot to mention the big thing. So at the end, this is really sweet. They do something called Unexpected Moments, where Angela Lansbury comes out and talks about like three songs in musicals that turned a whole show around.
Oh.
And so she talks about Memory from Cats, and Betty Buckley comes out and sings from Cats. And then she talks about Little Night Music, and she sings Send in the Clowns.
Oh.
But in the middle, folks, she talks about Company. And she says, well, you know, the last number in Boston wasn't working, and so they replaced it with a song called Being Alive. And here to sing it is Larry Kurt.
Oh, yeah.
2 years and one day after he sings Being Alive on that stage, he dies. And you can tell he's sick. You look at him, and it's very clear he's ill. He's one of the many, many people that we lost to AIDS.
Yeah.
If nothing else, if you don't want to watch the whole broadcast, at least go to watch Larry Kurt sing Being Alive, because I think he knows watching him, I think he knows.
Oh, man.
And like I said, 2 years to the day later, he passes away. It's a really fabulous broadcast. The season might not have been all that fabulous.
I want to check it out.
But it's I think it's a really, really interesting broadcast because it gives you so many little samples of things. And like I said, the speeches are great. You're getting that late 80s fashion. You got Christine Baranski.
Shoulder pads.
Yes. Christine Baranski's got hair up to here.
Bangs for days.
And of course, you get Isabel Stevenson coming out telling you about the American Theater Wing.
Fast forward every time. I was always like, oh,
that was
time to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. And I was like, and now a message from the president of the American Theater Wing, Isabel Stevenson. She always pre-recorded it. I'm like, where are you? You can't come in live for this? Always pre-recorded with a little gloss on the camera, I think, to make her look pretty good.
A little Vaseline on there.
And she just like tells you these stories, and I'm like, thanks, Isabel.
That's great.
The American Theater Wing. But I think if somebody came in and auditioned for me and they did Isabel Stevenson's American Theater Wing speech as a monologue, I would hand them the script and be like, you just tell me what role you want.
Whatever you want.
And we'll go from there. We'll go from there.
That could be your next impression.
Isabel Stevenson?
Yeah, you could work.
I got to work. Somebody suggested I should do Mrs. Roper from Three's Company, but I need a moo-moo for that. And also, oh, we didn't even talk about shows. Have you seen any shows lately?
No, I've not seen anything.
I saw Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish.
Yes.
Very moving.
Really?
Very moving. Very moving.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm sorry. I was not a huge fan of the last production of Fiddler on the Roof that was on Broadway.
Not the Alfred Molina. I loved the Alfred Molina.
Me too. Nobody else
loved
did.
That
I
was David Laveau directed it. Kevin Stites was the music director.
I
that was
loved
amazing.
It.
But no, you're talking about the one. That was at the Broadway theater.
Yeah, just not my cup of tea.
Yep. Sure.
But this, I think, is such a beautiful interpretation of the play, regardless of the fact that they're speaking Yiddish, because that's like a novelty.
That's
what gets people in. Beyond that, though. Absolutely beautiful production. Wow. And seeing it performed in Yiddish is very heart-wrenching. I don't know about you. Are you like one of those Ancestry.com individuals?
I got my DNA done.
I'm horrible. I have no interest in that.
Yeah.
I have no interest in that. But watching Fiddler, for the first time, I was so interested, thinking to myself, like, where did my family come from?
Right. Did they go through something like this?
Yeah.
Did they have to, like, travel and leave their home? And
I think, you know what I think it was? This is so weird. Motel is the model of the tailor.
Yes, of course.
Taylor in German is Schneider. So my last name
isn't that interesting.
Is Taylor. The story from my family, and I don't know if it's true or not, is that when my family came to Ellis Island, that our last name wasn't Schneider, that whoever had come over was confused by the question and thought occupation was last name. Mm-hmm. And he was a tailor, so he put down, I'm a Schneider.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it sort of has stuck ever since.
That's,
I don't know.
I think you should explore, Rob.
I kind of, watching that Fiddler, I was like, I'm really interested. It's a beautiful production.
Oh,
Joel Grey directs it brilliantly.
Good job,
and Stephen
Joel
Skybell, who's Tevye, is so, so moving. I saw Lolita, My Love.
Yes, you did.
Not going to see that again, ever again. That show's that show's never coming back.
I must say I'm impressed how much, you know, sometimes the York does these shows and they're a little under the radar and people, you know, the same people go to see them. But I was impressed at how many people were talking about this Lolita, My Love.
It was all over the place.
It really was. Articles being written, people were talking about it on social media. So I was happy that at least it created a discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, when are you going to see this show again?
No, it's
you
not.
You know what I mean?
It's
nice when they...
It's a history. It's a museum piece, really. And
I
appreciate theater for that effect as well. I think it's important to know what all the shows that were hits. It's good to know what didn't make it. Why didn't it make it? What can we learn from that?
Absolutely. And then coming up is I Married an Angel in Encores.
I know.
It's a very interesting show. Are you familiar with it?
No, but I'm impressed that they've picked that. You know, everyone always has opinions about what Encores does for their seasons always. But, you know, I thought, wow, that's Rodgers and Hart.
And so originally it was George Balanchine directed and choreographed it, and he did it for his wife, Vera Zorina. Is that her name?
Yes.
And this time it's sort of like mirrored because it's Josh Bergas directing and choreographing it, and his wife is starring in
it. Sweet.
Who's
like
a
that.
Principal dancer at the New York City Ballet.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. We'll be seeing that soon. We're seeing Be More Chill pretty soon.
I'm very excited about that.
I'm very excited too.
Yeah.
I just bought my tickets to Hillary and Clinton, the Laurie Metcalf, John Lithgow play.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go first preview. Tonight, I'm seeing King Lear with Glenda Jackson.
Glenda.
I'm very nervous.
Her Royal Majesty.
I bought a Fitbit.
I've just been noticing this on your wrist
right
now.
I bought a Fitbit, and I don't know. Like, I'm a little worried, like, how do I shut it off? So, like, during the show, it buzzes, like, if I get a text message or an email.
Oh.
But I have no idea how to shut this off. I don't want... My worst fear is that Glenda Jackson stops the show and is like, who's the man with the watch?
I hear a Fitbit in the audience.
Like she would
J101.
Know. Oh, dear God. I got them on TDF. I don't know where I'm sitting.
Okay.
Also, once again, God bless TDF, because I see so many shows on there for cheap, and I'm all Cher Show, I paid $43.
Always.
I was in the orchestra.
Always.
On the aisle.
I've said it once, I've said it again. I'm convinced that they fill out those orders first because it's a not-for-profit, it's a donation thing. I feel like they go there first, and then they go to Today Tix and all the other places that you get your tickets.
Absolutely.
I do. I think that. I always have. When I saw Indecent, we were in the orchestra on the aisle. I mean, it was like incredible seats.
Oh, so God yeah, bless them. Thanks, TDF.
Thank you, TDF.org. If you're not a member, go get your cheap seats. It's like a $35, $50, you know, fee for the year. It pays for itself as soon as you buy the seats. They're like, they're so good. Yeah.
As soon as you buy one ticket, you're like, I paid for the year.
And tis the season. This is the season to go see stuff because, right, I mean, this is the
spring.
Time. Because the audiences are not full. You go in on Wednesday night, the theater's going to be empty. Go see
audiences
anything.
Are not full, and you're going to get inundated with all these great shows that are coming out competing for the Tonys.
I got to do this. Now I've got my evenings free, so I'm
going to
go see
there,
stuff.
Yeah, but King Lear's on there, so I'm seeing that tonight.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, well, this was fun. Till next time.
We'll see you in 2 weeks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.